It's time for another Internet Advisor Show podcast. Since 1998, we've been helping computer users get on the Internet, get around it, and get over the problems they encounter there. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour weekly radio program heard on WJR 760 AM in Detroit since 1998 and across the state of Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor podcast.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Thank you for joining us here on the Internet Advisor, Andy. Happy holiday season to you. My name is Foster Brown, and I've got the whole crew in studio. Mr. Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson. And we've got a delightful couple of guests in here, Art and Jenny McCafferty. Some of the survivors from Internet TV. We're also going to be talking about the big T-Mobile shift in cell phone plans. What's that going to do to the rest of the industry? Stay tuned for the Internet Advisor coming up right now.
To the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Riddell.
Well, we were getting into it already before we're running before we even get the microphones open here. Welcome to the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown. Mr. Gary Baker. Gary, good to have you here.
It's always a pleasure.
Ed Riddell, good to have you in the house.
What a glorious day.
His feistiness himself, Mr. Cal Carson.
You know,
he's saving all this up.
What's really funny is I think this is the first time I've seen Gary in a while.
It's been, well, you've been gone for 3 weeks.
That's amazing.
So this is like fourth week.
It's and, you know, he still seems the same, Windows self.
So Mr. Snarkiness over there was trumpeting the sales figures for the Windows Surface.
Well, actually, it wasn't so much that I was trumpeting.
Surface Pro.
I just started doing some research because I was just wondering, you know, why it seems, and it's not a knock, but why it seems that this thing is not catching faster. And I looked at some of the numbers and stuff like that, and then I started to actually look at it from a realistic standpoint. And then the fact of the matter is I can't compare it to, like, any of the tablets out there.
No.
Because it's not really a tablet,
right?
But yet it's not a laptop,
right?
So it's like a
actually,
it is.
Yes, it is. It is, especially if you look at the
RT, but I would consider the Surface
Pro. We're talking about the Surface Pro. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you saying the Pro is more like a laptop?
Absolutely,
from a function standpoint, but from a form standpoint, it still looks like a tablet. So it's in between. I agree with Cal.
But in many cases, Cal, if you look right now, what's out on the market, there are a lot of them with the detachable screens.
Yes.
That are serving
HP makes
Lenovo
them, right. Dell
has
makes
the Yoga.
Them.
Yeah. Dell has got the, I forget what it's called, the XPS. But anyway, they all have come out with them. So it's in that hybrid.
It's a hybrid. Yep.
That's a new category that's come out.
But if you want to, you know, from a tablet standpoint, and I think Cal will agree with me. I'm not really sure yet, but I think he will, that I just helped an associate of mine buy an iPad. And the new, iPad 4, I mean, this was yesterday, the iPad 4, we went into Best Buy and we said, should we buy it here or should we go up to Micro Center for $50 less because Microsoft, or Micro Center up on 14 Mile Road and 75 here near Detroit is selling them for $50 less. And they said, we'll honor that. So.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if I should have told everybody on the air. That's only between us guys.
Okay? All right. We're just jumping around a bit. But I had the same thing. A friend of mine this week was making a decision about whether to go with a tablet or they wanted something light form factor. And I said, iPad 4 was they were considering. And in the end, they got it. And I recommended that they shop at the Apple Store because, and I don't know if this is the experience that your friend had, Gary. Let's check this out. At the Apple Store, what I love, my granddaughters, when they went in there and got their iPads, that Apple employee, like your daughter, Cal, spent an hour helping them set everything up, from getting their account to making sure everything was working. So when they walked out of that store, They had a fully functioning iPad that they understood. Not just the machine, but they really were all hooked into it and ready to go.
Yeah, so not just to set them up, but maybe some training too. Because we set up my associates in about 15 minutes. We just logged in, got
into
iCloud.
Now, did the sales guy do that?
No. Okay. We just did it.
But here's my point.
But it takes about 15 minutes. So the other 45 was probably in training.
Yeah. Okay. But I think that what was nice at the Apple store when you go there is you pay like maybe a few dollars more, but you get an incredible amount of service there. That was what I told my friends, and that's what they came back loving, that they had really felt it's one of the few places I think you can go nowadays and really get a satisfying experience of buying something because they really make you feel like you made the right decision.
I just hate – every time I think about going to an Apple store, I think I have to wear a tie-dye shirt. I just
no.
No.
Listen, you'll find people whose hair is gray as Art's is.
Well, I bet you he wore tie-dye when he was younger.
Definitely. Right, Jenny? He wore tie-dye. Look, so did Jenny, too.
Look at Foster's hair, and he's pointing at Art. Okay. I
you know, right. I think really what it boils down to is that what position are you in as a buyer? If you're in a position where you're technologically savvy or you have a technologically savvy friend, a.k.a. Gary Baker, then you can go into a place like Best Buy, just buy it, walk out the door, and you're fine.
It's pretty easy to set up, though. You don't need to be very, very good to set up, don't you think?
Well,
that's why I like the iPad.
I want to say that. But if I say it, I know I'm saying it because I'm a tech guy, and it's like falling off a log.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Where if you're not a tech person, you've just been watching TV and go like, oh, wow, I want one of those things. And then you get it and go like, duh.
Now what do I do?
What do I do?
I guess in that case, you need that sort of thing. We set up all our mail accounts right away.
It would be, that's it. I think for the non-tech person, more and more the experience that you pay good money for is the one where somebody hands you a device that is already shaped, conformed to what your needs are with your mail accounts, with your photos or hooked up, whatever it is, and that you walk out of there with a basic knowledge of how to run it.
And it's family friendly. I mean, at that point. And I think that's one of the reasons why Microsoft decided to open up their Microsoft stores.
Yes,
very
precisely.
Marginal, very spotty where they're at. What are there, eight?
There's going to be one coming up in this spring. Matter of fact, I think either
they
the
should
end
have done it 20 years ago.
Yeah, well, they're going to do it now in Somerset, one floor above where the Apple store is.
Oh, of course. Mm-hmm.
Well,
but,
well,
it's cheaper with the higher people.
And Micro Center, down the street from where that is, Micro Center is also very friendly. They'll set it up for you if you want. And Shane's, Comtech Services. Thank you.
Shane Hamlin, who works here with us.
In Sterling Heights, right?
Yeah, now he represents a smaller shop where you probably would get, I think, some of that same service.
You get the service, I think, from him.
So really, what's nice I'm seeing is, and we're getting more and more emails telling me, where can I go to get X service? I think what's happening is people are really getting and valuing service, that personal service. If that's one thing that will make you run back to an Apple store, it's that. Or any other store that will give you that. And it's well worth the expense. Hey, coming back in just a minute, we're going to talk with a couple of pioneers. Art and Jenny McCaverty talk about Internet TV. Well, after having teased him before about having a lot of snow on the mountain, I would like to say that I have an old friend that I am introducing here to the program.
An old and elderly.
His name is Mr.
Age.
Art McCaverty. Art's here along with Jenny, and welcome to the two of you. It's so good to have you back in studio. Jenny,
it's good to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And Art, you old rascal, good to have you here.
Thank you. Good to be back and see everybody here. This is 16 years. I can't, it's hard to believe.
We're working on our 16th year here, as a matter of fact. We've had you on quite a bit during that time, and
we're like this Saturday Night Live. We should get our jacket. I think this is the fifth time. I mean, there's a five-time guest. I think this is it because we never get a check.
It's got to be more than five.
We never got a check here.
Well, talk to Mark. Mark, talk to marketing about that. Okay,
all right.
Talk to Mark. In any case, it's so good to have you. Let's reintroduce you, though, to folks who may be joining us now, haven't heard about you folks before. And you have been working for many years. I think it's 35 years total that you've been working in publishing.
That's correct, yes.
With Great Lakes Sports
Publishing. Runner, Michigan Golfer Magazine, Great Lakes Skier, Indiana Runner, Great Lakes Triathlete were our print publications. So that's how we kind of started back in 78, 79.
But I'll tell you one thing, that while you were a publisher, you jumped on the internet bandwagon when it was just a little pull cart. I remember when, you know, in 94, when we started the Internet Council in Ann Arbor, you guys were there. I think you were part of the inaugural group, weren't you?
I think there were 10 of us around the table. Yes.
Yep, yeah. I think you're right.
Jenny taught the first collegiate Internet golf, Internet course in Michigan as far as getting those new skills.
Really?
Yes, yeah.
Where was that, Jenny?
Eastern Michigan University.
It was June 93 up in Traverse City, Michigan, for the Eastern Michigan's Adventures in Education program, and it was all teachers. Can you imagine? All teachers were in my class.
How were they? Well behaved, I hope.
No, they weren't. Right. Not at all.
I imagine they'd be the worst of the students.
They certainly know how not to be. They,
yes. Exactly. What about my grade? You know, I mean, teachers are no different. You know? Well, I want to get an A. All right,
so
okay.
How did you, and speaking of this kind of visionary thing, I remember the times that you've been on here talking about, you were one of the first people I remember getting into doing TV on the internet.
We had the world's first internet television network, and you got a network by having two channels. First, well, that's
right.
It, right?
Yep. I agree.
It's like the umpire says, it ain't nothing till I call it. Okay. So we debuted the Michigan Golfer TV show here on March of 2001.
That's right.
And then we launched the Michigan Runner back on that. I mean, shortly thereafter, so we had a network. So I did a lot of searching on that, and it wasn't that much to search in those days as far as video. So we were the first ones up there. In fact, at the old Internet Council, I think we used to talk about a year or 2 years before that, Gary, how because I produced a show, not produced a show, Tom Durant produced a show.
Yes.
We did the golf show on PBS.
That's right.
And so my dilemma was, as a salesperson, they wanted to see it once when one of us, PBS, once it was gone, it was, I mean, there was no repeats or anything like that, so you'd have to send them.
It's very hard to.
But I said, someday, you know, someday the technology will be there when I can say, your show is up today, tomorrow, and next week. It's just always going to be up. So that's how I got interested in.
It's funny you mentioned Tom Durant, that he's still working on trying to get the Great Lakes Ports of Call that we did. Three seasons of that. He and I shot that around Michigan, beautiful, and the Midwest. He's still trying to get that into a digital form that he can share. But he's been on PBS a couple times. But let's talk about how has that gone for you? I mean, it's a challenging area to be in.
And
if anything, you know, the whole visual aspect of the internet has exploded now. Have you kind of surfed that wave?
Well, I guess a couple things, and I guess what do we got here? What, 4 hours time here? I forget. How much do we have? Another five minutes?
Yeah, just keep talking. We'll let you know.
Well, you know, Jenny and I just had we just went to a workshop on which we did many years ago on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. Right. Various, but as a publisher. As a person who really tries to assemble money, as a publisher and producer, just like your folks, I have to find where the money is. And so it really goes down to, like in a magazine, how many are printed. And then with, as you talked about, even with Tom, it's the traffic and the track online.
Right.
So
right.
It's been very difficult to create models for making money off internet television. We've been able to do it by basically going to golf courses and putting their show up online, putting a little score behind it. We do a lot of, for example, the Thanksgiving turkey trot down here. We videotape that and put that up. We have like 15 or 20 shows up about 2 or 3 days after that. So we're kind of getting to the event things. And Gary, we were talking about his daughter trying to go on to Rio in the Olympics. Our cameras now since that 2001, when you said, you know, I remember you saying, I have never seen the two of you are the most impressive people I've ever seen ever. When you said that, we were inspired. We were inspired. And so we said, we're going to go big time. So our cameras have been on every continent in the world, ladies and gentlemen.
Including Antarctica. Wow.
And of course, Antarctica three times.
Wow.
So we have,
I didn't even realize they counted that as a continent anymore.
Well, yes.
It's shrinking.
But anyways, we have produced since that time a video a day. I think we've produced over 4,500 videos now online. So But are we making a lot of money? No! No, we're not. I mean, come on. We're just tired of this. So we want
he
to say,
the guy, by the
want
way.
To buy our company out there. We're going to let you have it at a
Art,
song.
Art is the guy who is on the corner, by the way, and says, we'll broadcast for food.
Yeah.
Well, okay, now you've got the programs up there. And by the way, folks, if you go to internetadvisor.net, you will see the links. We put links up there to the Michigan Golfer TV, Runner TV, Travel TV, and Skier TV. Those are the four we put up there, links to. And you see there's lots of great shows you've got linked up to, videos that are there. So what's going forward? You said it. You said it loudly and with a lot of emphasis. It's hard to make this thing work. You guys have done it, I think, almost, you know, despite itself, because you have a passion for it.
Well,
how can
say,
you keep going?
Well, here it is, I guess. And I think we'll do a couple quick things here as far as we're talking with Gary. How does one make money, or how does one create a wave? So I think we've been able to certainly pay the bills and make a little bit of money. I mean, we travel well.
Yep.
But I remember when we did this show here in 2001, we were very excited. We had this Michigan golfer show, and we were down at the golf show. Later on that year, that was when Clive Owens came out. BMW came out with 8 short videos for the internet for BMW. John Frankenheimer, what some of the other ones?
Guy Ritchie. Ang Lee.
This is a big time video. I was teaching at Eastern at the time. These were extraordinary videos to be on the internet. I never saw anything like it.
Really well produced.
I called the ad agency and they wouldn't let it. They just thought I was some kind of spy. I said, you know, this is great. I'm teaching a class here on marketing on the internet. Can you tell me what the figures were? Well, I never got it, but we just got them now. In 4 months, they had 11 million viewers. So that was kind of a benchmark. So when we thought about coming here and the fact that, you know, I talked to Gary, said, what kind of budget do you have? So I got the same budget as last time. So we decided, and now I'm going to say.
And we're going to give it all to you, too.
The future was published in the New York Times on December 23rd, 25th. I'm going to let Jenny tell you about what the future is, because it is an extraordinary how the publishing goes from there.
Let's do this. As a matter of fact, we're going to take a quick break shortly. So Jenny, let's just kind of step our feet into the water there, and then we'll take a break and come back and wrap on this. But go ahead, Jenny.
Okay, in December, New York Times made waves by publishing an article in a multimedia online experience called Snowfall, the Avalanche at Tunnel Creek. And it's a very well-written story, but it comes with online. You get photographs, slideshows, videos, weather, interviews with the people who are involved, and it's just an extraordinary experience.
So Art is holding up
multimedia
for our microphones. Art's hoping you got a big spread here, Art.
14 pages.
Okay, so you this
people are going to have to squint to see that print, though.
But anyway, this was done a special one on December 23rd, 2012. It's before Christmas, and so the idea was that this was like a multimedia presentation.
Yes. Yes.
So that if you wanted to get the rest of the story or more, the visuals, et cetera, you had to go online.
In fact, I saw it first online, and I was just blown away. I was just gushing, saying, this is so cool.
So it's a marriage of the video along with the print.
It's a new way to tell a story.
It's a new way to tell a story. I like that idea. Let's get back to that, and we're going to come back to that in just a moment when we tell you after a short break here, and we will have a peek into the future of the internet. It's our pleasure to have back in our studios Art and Jenny McCafferty, who are with Great Lakes Sports Publishing. They've been doing that about 35 years. They've got lots of stuff, a lot of things online as well for you to watch. If you're a golfer, a runner, you love to travel in the state of Michigan, or you're a skier, they have individual channels that you can pop into and see little clips they've got, and you'll see those through. You can go to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, and click off to that. Just a quick statistic for you guys. I just saw that this week. More than 1 billion smart devices were shipped in 2012. 1 billion. Now, a smart device means you're going to have a ton of video capability with that.
Did you know that there are 5.1 billion cellular telephones in the world, and there are only 4.7 billion toothbrushes?
We got to find an attachment. This is a new app for doing your teeth, an electronic toothbrush. Anyway, it's interesting that this is, you know, valued at $576.9 billion, those sales. What I'm saying about that is that we're seeing in just last year alone this incredible boom in these devices that will be able to watch the kind of videos that we're talking about. Now, Jenny, just before we left, you were talking about the future of what publishing looks like, and you were pointing to the article that came out just before Christmas in the New York Times about, it's called
Snowfall.
Snowfall.
The article was published in the New York Times, but before that, they made the multimedia experience available on the web. And it's a great story.
So it's an interaction. I mean, the publishing experience is a complete one now.
Yes.
I think.
Okay. Yes. For example, it had video interviews with people who were involved in it. It had simulations of the avalanche so you could see how it happened.
I was just watching that on your iPad, and it was it's amazing.
It is. It is amazing. So it was very cool. If you want to see it, do a Google search for New York Times avalanche, and it'll come right up. And
great.
You can see it.
We're doing this, could you look for that to see if you can put it up on the site too?
Sure. It's sure will.
New York Times, called New York Times?
Avalanche.
Avalanche. We'll see if you can put that on our homepage. Internet advisors.
You know, and what you're saying, you know, reminds me of what Cal always says, is that there are two different types of, internet uses for PC. You have the consumers, which are all our tablet and phone users, and then there's the people that actually do the producing, too, as well. So,
and there are more and more of those people who are able to get into that as well. I think it's part of it, too, Al. Pardon me.
Art,
you and Jenny.
You don't give me a check. You forget my name.
Got to put that name badge on. Come on. We gave it to you. Put it on so I can keep. Scott, thank you. I'm having a hard. I remembered your name this week, I think, didn't I? I did it. It's good. Scott, thank you very much. It's our engineer, Scott Iamet. I want to call him something else all the time. Anyway, Art, there's a lot of people who have entered into this who aren't necessarily the kind of skilled people that you are. Does that make it difficult for you then to stand out amongst this, you know, this blizzard, this snowfall of all this video that's out there?
I think it's the content we've had up the last 30 years. I mean, we've got the credentials. So when you approach your client, the Michigan Golfer's been around 35 years now in print, online, video, newsletter. We're dumping our newsletters into Facebook, so it's all archived. And, of course, YouTube archives all the videos. So I think, from anything, I think we have become at least a strong voice in the sport in Michigan. So I think we can sell from that based on And the same thing with running. I mean, we've been around for a long time. We've covered marathons all over the world. So we're a voice. So from that standpoint,
and you have niche, and now it's niche marketing. I think we've gone from broadcasting to very narrow casting, focused casting, if you will. That allows the internet to do that, to speak to people in small groups. Cal?
Now, is your Michigan sports limited only to the professional sports, or do you go like lower to the collegiate and maybe even the high school sports?
They're taking care of those themselves. The high school, everybody's gearing up. Everybody does YouTube. I mean, the YouTube, they have tremendous controls now as far as, I mean, people can edit things online now as with YouTube and Google. So I think what we're just saying, that if we stay in our tracks of golf and running, we've been to the Olympics, we've been to Ryder Cups, so we're just staying those two fields. We think we can survive only because we have so much content going back 30 years.
Part of it is brand, isn't it?
Oh,
brand,
sure. Well, yeah, but you have, for the today's viewers, they hit print, online, newsletters,
so many ways. So many ways.
Just got to do it.
Of getting your information.
Yeah, it's not either or. It's and.
Yes, you have to have it. Well, New York Times has said, here's a struggling paper. This is our paper, and they're showing what the future is. And so as a publisher, I look at that and say, okay, we've got a long way to go. But nonetheless, we're not that far off.
Just in Ann Arbor, in the course of time that we've been on the air, Gary, the Ann Arbor News as a tree paper has gone away, and M Live is, am I right? M Live is the publication.
Well, AnnArbor.com.
Oh, AnnArbor.com.
But
right.
It hasn't gone away. It's just reduced.
Transformed.
It's, right. But there's paper also. You can.
Oh, there is.
Yeah.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
It hasn't
I'm
gone
sorry.
Away. It's just it's not either or. It's and.
But it's kind of like the Detroit Free Press and the Detroit News, where they've changed their models so they're online all the time. But for instance, I get deliveries on Wednesdays. In the weekends, I think.
Because people still enjoy a pulse-based storage system.
Thursday.
Do you think smartphones with their bigger size, and maybe like the iPad you're holding, Jenny, will take the place of that pulp paper?
Yes. I don't think the phones will take the place of it, but I do think the tablets and the mini tablets will work really well. The Kindles, the Nooks, the iPads, the larger format. Because I think where the phone will give you the ability to be able to grab quick snapshots of information that you want to get quickly, the real sitting down and enjoying experience is on a larger screen with a nice background to it, sitting beside, sitting somewhere down.
Well, you can sit comfortably and consume that content rather than on the tiny phone.
And it's a lot easier to carry around than your laptop.
So do you envision people wearing a pair of Google glasses and watching your videos. Okay. Or maybe making your videos.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, 3D is coming. I mean, it's already there online, so there's that to think about. So I think it's always a challenge trying to publish in this type of environment. But you folks have the same thing. You have iPods. You get Facebook.
Well, it's kind of interesting that the station that we're on now, WJR, was historically one of the great radio voices in the country from the very early days of radio.
Right. One of the 12 original superstations.
One of the 12 original superstations, and it was where you wanted to be if you wanted the community to hear yourself. That began to transform in the mid-90s when suddenly the little AM stations that I had worked on in this market could have the same kind of voice, or at the same volume, if you will, on the internet. Now, of course, we didn't have the news staffs or the personalities, et cetera, behind us. But the point is that that level got leveled out. And so you have to find a new way of doing things when it happens.
My father was on WJR in 1948 in a program called The Flying Farmer. 6:30, Saturday mornings. Arthur, your dad's on the radio.
I love it.
1948. It was big time.
Well, now your grandchildren can say, you know, to their moms and dads.
Yes.
Grandpa's
on the
radio.
Just you said running and golfing is what you guys cover the most of. Have you ever thought of mounting a camera on a runner during a marathon and just recording that whole game?
It's awful because runners don't glide.
No.
They bounce. And so does the camera. And you can't watch it for more than 2 seconds.
Can you get a camera with a steady cam on it that might work, though?
Yes.
$40,000 later, yes, you can.
Okay. Well, however. Those Hero cameras doing a very good job of that.
Yes.
Really, they are, and they've got some stability in it, and certainly that's a portion of that. I think, frankly, I used to ride it on back of motorcycles filming marathons, but I just can't swing the leg over them anymore. Too damn old. So
we'll have to get you a sidecar.
I guess. Sidecar just to carry the money around we're making from all these videos.
One more thing about snowfall in the avalanche story, the multimedia thing. Three of the skiers who were skiing that day had mounted head cams.
Oh,
and
wow.
So you can see what they're seeing.
It's funny you mentioned that because I was driving just yesterday, looked up in my rearview mirror, then two vehicles behind me was a guy on a motorcycle with a camera on his helmet.
Yes.
Either he's working for Google or making some home movies.
Well, that's how those meteors, tell them about the meteors, Jenny.
Oh, the reason there's so much video of the meteor that struck Russia is because in Russia, most cars have a camera. So when they go to court over an accident, they've got evidence. That's
done.
Why there's so much
I wonder
video
why there were
it.
So many
Wasn't there a lot of tape
there?
On that
oh,
meteor?
Yes.
I mean, it was awesome.
It was incredible. They had all those different angles.
Yes.
Well,
yeah.
What a different world we're in now in the sense of this multimedia way of getting hold of things that people can choose. Everything from, if you will, the dead tree news that they open up on a piece of paper to something as remarkable, for instance, as the iPad that you have or the smartphones. It's more and more information in people's hands. Are you finding that people are getting connected to one another through that, Art and Jenny?
You know, we have four or five distinctive products, and we can't tell you that much of the crossover. For example, we get 20,000 people get Michigan Golf News every week. Are they the same people that go watch Michigan Golf or TV? Mm. Right now, we launch our Michigan Runner online first, and then the print, and then the UPS. We just can't wait. The technology, print technology, is 2 or 3 weeks slow.
Yeah.
Jenny's got the book done. We put it online. So our traffic online is almost as much as the print is now.
You know, you've seen the one transition from stone tablets to print.
Are
we going to see print to, to digital and the print go away?
Yes.
Oh, Art and Jenny, it's so good to have you on again. And I can't wait to hear about what your adventures are in the future. Stick around because we'll just keep on chatting in studio here. We're going to take a quick break. Mike Brennan is back with us, speaking of publishers, with Michigan Technology News coming up in just a moment. A very happy holiday season to you. A happy Easter for those of you who are listening to us on our base station. It's WJR 760 AM here in Detroit live. A very happy holiday weekend to you. A very happy Easter and also Passover as well. And thank you for being with us here on the Internet Advisor. Kudos, by the way, to the folks behind the glass, our lady of the phone calls, which is Annie. Annie, we're going to be coming up on our live phone calls in just a little bit after the news at 800-859-0957. back after kind of being off our local station here where you can have live phone calls. But for the rest of you, by the way, out there listening to us through the Michigan Talk Network, you also can get your questions into us by going to the homepage, internetadvisor.net, clicking on Contact Us, and then just send us an email with your question and we'll get it answered as quick as we possibly can. Time now, however, for Mike Brennan and MichiganTechnologyNews.com. Mike, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Thanks, Foster. How you doing, Gary?
Hey, good, Mike. Glad to have you back.
Speaking of old friends, good to have you back. What's in the news in Michigan?
Well, there's lots of good news on the financial front for tech companies. One of the bigger, well, not big story, but one I really liked was Green Lancer. I'd never really heard much about it, but it's a service, a network, actually, of engineers who are freelancers that do energy-related stuff, you know, alternative energy, that sort of thing. And so they're calling them Green Lancers instead of freelancers. Anyway, they got $275,000 in private funding from a syndicate of Michigan-based investors that includes, BizMU and Start Garden in Grand Rapids and several of the angel groups. And it was oversubscribed. Everybody was clamoring to get on board. So it seems like a hot idea that everybody wants to buy into, right? So.
Excellent.
And then speaking of green, I'm a little segue there, later in April, April 26th through 28th in downtown Rochester, the MI Earth Day Fest is coming back after a three-year hiatus, and it's a chance, well, in the years past, they've attracted up to 50,000 people over the 3 days, and it's a chance for anybody that really wants to know more about alternative energy-related stuff. They'll have vendors there and booths and programming, so you can learn how to do different things. You know, if you want to have your house be more green or your business be more green, and it's a pretty good show. I've been a media sponsor a number of occasions, and so I really want to support these guys and get the word out. And it's free, so how can you go wrong with that, right?
Right.
Okay. There's also, speaking of money, it's going to be starting sometime in the second quarter, but it's called Michigan eLab. And it's a group of Michigan faculty, student, alumni, university research partners et al. And they're coming together to put together a pool of $40 million that will be used to fund the stuff that comes out of the U of M, you know, where a professor might have a great idea, but, you know, doesn't have the dough to pull it off, or students. And they've gotten money from the Michigan Pure Venture Development Fund, and they're just kind of getting all their ducks in a row, but that's supposed to launch sometime in the second quarter, April or May time frame. Probably, Gary, when we're at the Michigan Growth Capital Symposium, they'll announce it, right? So.
Yeah, they'll probably announce it right there. You're right.
Yeah, so
lots of good news on development, Mike, that are going on, which means that people who are excited about to have new ideas for new businesses in here in Michigan are getting attention, and I guess more importantly, Gary, they're getting money to be able to work on those inventions.
Finally, right? Yeah. We're starting to see a very robust venture capital and seed capital, and even some later stage capital investment here in Michigan. So, good news.
You talk about
there's a lot of money in this state. We did some stories earlier in the year where there's like thousands and thousands of people in this state that are worth more than $1 million, which is kind of the criteria that you have to be so an accredited angel investor. You know, wealthy guys like Gary. So,
my dreams.
What we got to get is more of those folks organized. We got to get them more plugged into angel groups. I mean, for instance, I know Grand Angels over here in Grand Rapids. They vet the deals, but it doesn't require everybody in the group, and there's 50 or so of them, to invest. It's really up to you if you want to put any money in. So, I mean, they because a lot of these deals are kind of complicated. They have really kind of cool technology that more traditional investors don't understand.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's where an angel group can really help folks, you know, get involved if they want to. So.
Exciting time to be an entrepreneur in Michigan. Cal, I think you had something quick, Mike.
Yeah, Mike, I see something about our friends over at Airfoil. They're going to get something called a Silver Anvil Award. What's that about?
Well, they do a lot of different things, you know, in terms of technology and PR and whatnot. And this is a national award that they're up for, and it's for a campaign that they did with Microsoft for the small and medium-sized business groups' business-to-business marketing campaign. Mm. Now, they're a finalist, and my disclaimer is I've known Lisa, geez, forever, Lisa Valley Smith, and so they're a really good group, and they really are only really true technology PR firm in the state, and they're very, gosh, you know, they just did a deal with a European company where they have a partnership. So for all those companies in Michigan or the Midwest that want to get into Europe, I have exposure in Europe, Airfoil's reached out and they have this joint venture. You got to get Lisa on the show to talk about it.
Yeah, that'd be good. We have been, the beneficiaries have been connected to Airfoil for many years. They have been very good at helping us to get Microsoft products in particular to test out.
Very good friends. So.
Very, very good friends. Mike, thank you so much for being with us. It's been great to hear from you. I hope you have a wonderful holiday weekend out there in Grand Rapids.
Happy Easter, Foster.
Thank you, too. And look for Mike's column at MichiganTech.com. MichiganTechNews.com. You can go to our homepage at InternetAdvisor.net, and you will see more of it there. Hey, guys, just quickly, and Art and Jenny, feel free to chime in on this as well. Big news item that came out this week in terms of cell phones and cell phone contracts is that T-Mobile announced they are going to offer a no-contract cell phone deal. Essentially, it means that there's going to be a flat rate for your subscription every month for all the data, all the texting and phone calls that you want to use. And then there's a grade of how much data you use beyond that. So like it goes
why
up
is that
about,
new? I mean, why is that new? I mean, they've had no contract cell phones for a long time.
They're not going to have any contracts at all.
Yeah, so, you know, others have done something similar to this, not the Big East, but Virgin Mobile and a number of others. And really all it is, you know, because there's a two-year contract for, you know, for Verizon and AT&T and a few others, they just spread out the cost of the phones. So all T-Mobile has to do is pay for their service, which is now flat rate for everybody, right, in all, you know, Verizon and AT&T have led the charge, but a lot of companies have gone that way. And then they just have to add that piece in to pay for the phone itself. So,
but it's 0% financing on it. And once you've paid off the phone, this is, I think, to me a key point. Once you've paid off the phone, let's say in 2 years at $20 a month, whatever it may be, however long it took to buy that particular piece of the device, whether it was an iPhone 5 or a BlackBerry 10 or whatever it was, an HTC 1, at that point, you stop paying for devices. It's done. Whereas with Verizon and AT&T, if you kept that same device, you would continue to pay same fee. Yeah, so somebody did a calculation, and over 2 years, there would actually be roughly a $600 savings for going with the T-Mobile. My question to you is, do you think this is going to catch on, or will it be like the Virgin and some of the other ones that have gone in the past? A flash in the pan, and the big ones, the big companies are going to squeeze it out. What do you think?
The
horn.
Well, I hope not, because, you know, I think it's time to break the monopolies, that I want to be able to walk in with my own phone that I bought at the store and hook it up to your network.
Gal, what do you think?
I agree with it. I'd like to be able to have that same option as well. Whether it'll last, I don't know. It's really kind of strange. Everybody loves the free phone idea.
Yeah, yeah, but it ain't free in the end. Art.
Excuse me, I got to get this call.
Jenny?
I think they're basically saying, our service is good enough, you'll stick with us anyway.
Yeah, the service, by the way, service is a big issue, although T-Mobile is now launching its own 4G LTE service in about 7 cities. They say by 2014 or 2013, the end of this year, they're going to have a lot of places covered. Interesting subject. We'll get back to it. Here's the phone number. We need to have you give us a call with your problems. 800-859-0957. 800-859-0WJR. You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. If you want to see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at InternetAdvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage or enter our forums and place your question there. You can also friend us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor Show podcast. Thank you for getting here and being part of the Internet Advisor. Those of you listening to us live right now on WJR, it's your chance to get on the air with your question. 800-859-0957. We're looking forward to talking with you at 800-859-0WJR. Jot that number down and get on the air with us. Get in line and we'll get your questions answered in just a moment. Welcome back to what we consider probably the most fun part of our Internet Advisor Show, and that's when we get to talk with you. And now that a certain part of the March Madness is over, Mr. Gary Baker is smirking over there because the Maize and Blue are not.
I was disappointed that Spartans didn't come back like the Wolverines did last night.
Well, I tell you, it was a fairy tale ending for the Michigan Wolverines when they came back to tie it up and they went into overtime.
It would have been nice to see Indiana win also and have all four Big Ten schools.
Oh, that would have been, yeah.
Go to the Elite Eight, and wouldn't it have been wonderful to see a Final Four with all four Big Ten
that
schools?
That would have been great.
I actually was pulling for the Florida Gulf Coast. I wanted a Cinderella team to come in there. And I think Michigan would have played them had they won, which would have been a great – I mean, they would have got slaughtered. But
I was pulling for it, too, because it would have been easier to beat them than it is Florida. But anyway.
Ed, this week you saw something online just before we get to our callers. And by the way, we've got Sally, Craig, and Doug out there. And for the rest of you, there are some phone lines open at 800-859-0957. Right now, live. Get your questions in. Eddie, before we get there, though, you had a story from this last week that was fascinating.
Well, it was a huge internet cyber attack that took place over in Europe that pretty much, according to some reports, could have brought the internet down to its knees, but did not. But what it was two major companies. You have a Dutch company called Cyberbunker, which is a hosting company, and their slogan is basically we'll service any website out there, you know, for you. They're hosting
any website,
including the WikiLeaks and the Pirate Bay, those websites like that, and they'll do anything but pornography or child pornography and anything on terrorism.
Right.
And what happened was there was another Swiss company called Spam House. Mm-hmm. That basically said, you know what, we're getting tired of blocking all these websites
and
for our
like
customers.
And they're like an antivirus company, aren't they?
They're an antivirus company.
Security company.
They do
whitelisting.
Whitelisting and blacklisting for companies.
Excuse me, just quickly. Whitelisting is, these are the good guys.
Right.
Blacklisting, these are the bad guys.
And then there's a whole bunch in between they haven't labeled.
Yeah, okay.
Right. But, you know,
that's their job.
There was a large percentage of cyber attacks and viruses being planted from the main, from Cyberbunker.
Okay.
And, you know, they said, you know, forget this. We're just going to blacklist the entire Cyberbunker hosting facility.
Well, we used to do that.
Yes.
We used to do that. If there was a ISP out there that had too much spam or whatnot coming from a particular set of IP addresses, just block the whole thing.
Exactly.
And then they would stop because all their legitimate traffic would complain that they can't get to any place.
And apparently there was a lot of that.
And then they would stop hosting the bad stuff, right?
But Cyberbunker took a different approach.
Yeah, the Cyberbunker. Apparently, Sven Kampfes, who's basically one of the company employees, took it upon himself to use the old hosting, you know, because they host all these websites, and he basically just generated thousands of websites that were basically spamming Spam House and doing denial of service attacks to them. And what happened, you have these two internet giants over there battling over in Europe. One of them's trying to block them, and the other one's just
flooding
keeps on doing
enormous amounts of information through all of those data links out there, potentially slowing down internet traffic because
but
it would
where
keep
is
on
it
trying
slowing
to find,
it down?
Well,
over
in Europe.
It wouldn't have touched the traffic here, except
correct.
Any traffic coming from Europe or going to Europe.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. So, I mean, the headlines were kind of sensationalistic. It was almost like a Star Wars battle. You know, the Death Star, you know, arrives.
Yeah. So,
But the intensity and the amount of data and transaction that were taking place per second was, I mean, it was pegging out the internet. It was set new records.
Yeah.
So you have two legitimate companies that were battling each other, almost a cyber attacking each other.
So one guy was very devious in what he did,
mm-hmm.
right?
And he thinks
company.
That he's completely legitimate in what he did.
Yeah,
and,
so, I have a particular place
in hell.
Hades for him. Right? Because it's not
against the law.
Well,
yes, it is. It's against many laws, right?
Who polices the internet?
Well, but that's the problem.
That is a good
problem.
It
doesn't matter if it's lawful or unlawful. How are you going to catch them, stop them? And they
why did they stop?
They do eventually.
Did you say why they finally stopped? Where they were just.
You know, I haven't got that far yet. No, I don't know if they even actually
stopped. It did eventually stop, though.
Right.
Yeah. Somebody got to somebody and spoke some sense into them. The fallout from this, watch it this week, folks, if you follow these kind of things online. That may be very, very interesting this week. Okay, let's get to our phone calls because we've got some folks waiting out there with their own level of questions, probably not quite this techie. Sally from Novi, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How you doing?
Hi, thank you. I called a few weeks back in regards to my links not opening on my Outlook Express.
Mm-hmm.
Email?
Yes.
Okay. Some of them will open. Some won't. For example, I just opened a site from Amazon, an email from Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to the link, and it will not open for me.
The Amazon won't open for you.
Well, okay. The Amazon opened, but if there's something I want to click on.
Right, a link within it. You can't open it up. Now, you said some will open up. What kind will open up?
You know, it's hard to tell because at least I'm finding that at least 90% will not open.
Okay.
Now, is it possible that that you might have to hit the control key when you hover your mouse over it? I know Outlook, standard Outlook, and a lot of email packages, they'll say something like, press the control key when clicking on this link to open in a new window.
No, I've never seen that.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll tell you what, Sally, we're going to put you on hold while we take some thought about this during the break, and we'll come back and try to give you some help as well with this issue. And there's a phone line open there for you too, folks. 800-859-0957. Remember, the only dumb question is the one you don't ask. Welcome back to a holiday edition of the Internet Advisor. Big holiday this weekend for those of you listening to us live here on our flagship station, WJR. And for the rest of you, I hope you're enjoying a lovely weekend, whatever time you hear us, through the Michigan Talk Network as well. Our phone number again, 1-800-859-0957. And we have with us online Sally from Novi. Sally, when you called in just a few moments ago, you were telling us that you have a problem with your Outlook Express mail, that sometimes, matter of fact, most of the time, when you go into an email and you click on a link that's in there, it will not open up. And during the break, you and I were chatting, and you said that you went to something called Options Security, right, under the Outlook Express? Sally? Right?
Yes.
Okay. You went in that, and then you saw there was a little box in there that said, do not allow attachments to be saved or open, right? Okay, and you unchecked that, right?
I did.
Okay, then you rebooted your computer, right?
I did.
And when you went back and looked at that box again, was it checked or unchecked?
No, it's unchecked.
Okay, did you go back to the link then in your email?
Let me try that.
Okay, because that may be the key that there was a setting. We'll at least take a crack at
that. Because I remember this call before, and basically there's a close tie between Internet Explorer and Outlook Express.
Yes.
And pretty much Internet Explorer's security options affect Outlook Express in Windows XP. And I had asked you to go into Internet Explorer, I believe, and I think maybe do a reset in there or go into the security tab in there and reduce the security settings. I believe that's how the conversation went last time.
But I think that she found this particular checkbox, too. So yes. have you found, Sally, what's happening?
I'm still trying. And
all right. I tell you what you do, Sally.
Now, the other thing, if you don't hang up after this call, and we'll put you on hold, and during the next commercial break, I'd like to get your email address, because I found a Microsoft article that describes how to go into in the control panel under folder options and repair HTML links and how to force them to open Internet Explorer or your default web browser.
Yeah, that might be a little bit too complicated to go into
right now. And I have to send you an article.
We'll do that. I'm going to put you on hold, okay? So what we'll do is we'll come back, and Ed can do that during the next break, and we'll check. Sometimes, folks, we run into things a little complicated to explain in one fell swoop. But the key here, I guess, guys, is that if you're having trouble with attachments in your mail, et cetera, check your security settings.
Correct.
Because whether they're
both
in the mail.
Both in the email or Internet Explorer or your browser.
Whatever browser you may have.
Yeah.
Right.
Should work with Mozilla.
Check it as well there. And part of the reason for this, folks, is that what's happened, I know with Microsoft Windows, when you're dealing with that type of an operating system, the problem has been that there are so many poisoned images and websites that come, you know, you hit, and it will drop these malicious things onto your email without you knowing it.
Correct.
And that's why they want to protect you from either an image or from a link from doing that. Okay, let's come on. We got Craig with us from Shelby, Ohio. Craig, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you?
Hey, guys, we're loving this weather, huh?
Oh, yes.
Anyhow, what I had, on my Sony CyberShot, I took a video. It was about 45 seconds. And then I tried to send it first to myself, and then I got not sendable, something about a file. I don't remember what it was. It was like 2 weeks ago. Since then, I downloaded Adobe XI Reader.
Acrobat 11.
Okay, yeah, 11. And I was able to send that video to myself. It said, when I went to send it, is 005.avi, 17.3 megabytes. Took about 2 minutes to actually upload or download, whatever you call it.
Well, that's actually kind of impressive, you know, compared to a few years ago. But, okay,
Pardon
go
me?
Ahead. So you're able to send it to yourself.
Yes. Okay. But it took like 2 minutes for it to almost to download, but I was able to do it this time. Was it because of the Adobe that I upgraded to or the free stuff that I downloaded?
No, you should be moving. You should be able to move an AVI file around. You know, that's an uncompressed file. That's called a container, actually, in videos speak. There are a couple containers, but then you can use a codec, which is a compression decompression algorithm that will compress to an MPEG-4 or to a .mov, a move file, which is QuickTime. That's usually used on Apple systems, but can be read by most systems out there if they have a QuickTime reader.
Well, let me just back up and try this from a different shot, okay? So you had this video you shot on your camera. And you wanted to put it in your computer, right?
It already is. I downloaded it from my CyberShot to my computer.
All right, and you converted it to the AVI at that time.
I didn't do it consciously.
Okay. All right.
That's the format.
Because it comes in yes.
Why were you trying to send this video somewhere?
Well, it's a video of me at work.
Okay.
And, you know, anything that I try to send like that, I always like to do a test to see if there's anything wrong with it, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But when I tried to send it a couple weeks ago, it
blew out.
To me, so it cannot. Well, first of all, I did the pictures on the attachments on AOL.
Yes.
So then I went to the paper clips, and then I was able to send it this time, but I had downloaded the Adobe 11 since then.
Well, I don't think Adobe did anything for you at all. I think you just finally figured out a way to make an attachment of an AVI file, and you were able to send it. Now, I'm sure there are thresholds on how big that file can be and whether or not they'll allow you to send it across the net. The other thing that I was wondering is why didn't you so you just needed to get that file from one location to another location, and you were sending it via email. Is that correct?
Well, when I tried to send it originally, that's what the message was. It was asking me to move it to another file, which I never did. But this time I was able to send it somehow.
It was asking you to send it to another file type?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And it's possible that the Adobe product that you did automatically created a compressed a compressible version of the movie file and converted it from AVI to something else which was smaller, which allowed your mail to be able to send it.
Are you working with? Excuse me. Did you say you're working with AOL?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. AOL is.
So what Cal said at the very beginning was, sending a 20 megabyte file, good luck trying to send a 20 megabyte file.
Yeah.
It's not meant to do that.
No.
You are not going to be able to send movie files very readily through email. There are other means.
Can we try that right? I think that might be a valuable conversation right now with Craig and for anybody else, because a lot of email systems are going to have a cap on how big something is that you can send out. I know with Hotmail, I got pretty serious. In fact, you have to pay more in order to be able to send bigger
files. That's the reason why you use something like free FTP.
There you go.
And be able to send it that way. So if you FTP or it you from one location to another, you can do it that way.
Dropbox. Or Dropbox.
Dropbox.
Or Dropbox. Or all those
or
different
or Microsoft's
SkyDrive.
SkyDrive.
Or Google Drive.
Or Google Drive.
All of those different ways.
Or the iCloud with Apple.
Yeah. Those are designed for what I call bulk data transfer.
Yep.
In other words, you're sending something that's bigger than just a small attachment on a piece of email. So in the future, you would use something like that instead. You wouldn't have to worry about changing the format or anything like that. You could send it natively back and forth to wherever you want it using those that type of tool. And when you got to work, you could pull it up on your machine with no problem as well.
Right. And if you wanted to email it to someone, you could just email them the link because Dropbox and SkyDrive and Google Drive allow you to share that out to participants or provide a link that you can, you know, this is my shareable folder that if someone receives an email from me, allow them to have access to this public version of this cloud-based storage.
I do audio work with Marathon in Findlay, Ohio. And in order to be able to share large files, large WAV files that are doing my audio.
Yeah, they're my neighbors.
All right, well, then I have to put that up onto something like a Dropbox, and then they pull it down from there.
Yeah, Dropbox, it's, you know, you're limited by the free amount.
What is that, Dropbox?
Dropbox, D-R-O-P, box, B-O-X.
And if you have a Hotmail account, free Hotmail, you get a SkyDrive.
All right, we'll come back in just a minute. Once again, I want to thank some of the people who make this program happen as well behind the glass, as we say, the engineers and the producers. Annie Nichols, who is our producer, our lady of the phones, thank you very much for that. Big smile when you talk with her. Scott Imeta, who is behind the boards, is our engineer. And Rich Luzinski's back there somewhere, I think, too. There he is, the maestro in the background conducting the orchestra. Thanks so much, guys, for being here for that. Number again, 800-859-0957. Just quickly to recap. We were talking with a friend from Ohio about how do you send large files back and forth. And more internet ISPs and other providers are cracking down on the size that you can send the package.
Well, and they're allowing sizes to get bigger and bigger is what really happens. Yeah. The difference is that the requests, the people want to send even larger files than what they were used to.
And some people, I don't think, are aware that, for instance, you take a picture out of camera, Cal, one of your point and shoots.
Once in a rare while.
Even with your iPhone, you know, if you want to send an image, that's a high resolution image.
Yeah.
It's like one point.
A 10 megapixel image suck up a couple of couple of meg, I should say.
Yeah, it's 3 meg. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
3 point something.
So when you're sending that, you know, like 4 or 5 pictures like that, you're sending a lot of information and you can find some problems. But fortunately, folks, there are some more and more ways of doing that out there through things like Dropbox and things through like Google Drive and through the iCloud on the Apple system and SkyDrive on the Microsoft network or system as well. So
more designed for that type of bulk transfer.
Exactly. More and more because of the larger and larger videos that people are sending, you know, birthday party. And they got happy birthday to you, to the 10-year-old, and you got that whole shot. This can take up some space.
Now, the other way to get around that, too, is that if you don't necessarily have to give them the actual video, you could post it up on YouTube and then just give them access to that particular YouTube site, and everybody can see it and have a good time.
YouTube is another.
If it's video, that's exactly the right way to go.
That's a great way to do that. Exactly. So you send them the link instead of the actual image itself. Okay. And let's go back to our phone calls to Doug from Temperance, Michigan, down on the border. How you doing, Doug?
Good, Foster. Thanks for taking the call.
Certainly.
I have a Samsung Galaxy Tab 2 7.0, and I bought it mainly for our grandkids to use at our house. I've been doing some reading on the internet about it, and some say you don't need virus protection for this tablet. I don't believe it. What I need to know is, do I need virus protection? And if yes, can you recommend a free one?
Boy, guys, this is interesting. You're breaking new ground for us here. This is a question I've seen bounced around, and I don't know. Does anybody out there have? I thought I saw that Norton was offering some security for tablets.
Yes, I believe so. Yeah, but I don't think there's any viruses right now out there that I see that are targeting Android devices running Jelly Bean or whatever flavor of the Android operating system you're running. Otherwise, our TV sets would have to be a lot of smart televisions right now, which most of them run Android. Mm-hmm. We'd have to have antivirus running on our televisions. So, not yet, but we're almost there.
I could see the day when I,
my
refrigerator's going to watch the Red Wings and get some exotic program out of Eastern Europe instead.
Yes. Yeah. So,
and then you have to pay a ransom to turn it off.
I don't believe there is any out there. I'm sure there's some out there.
There have been some alluded to, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Not widespread, certainly.
Right.
No. We'll have to explore that more. I'm sorry I can't give you a direct answer right now, Doug, because...
Now, there are parental controls you can put.
I have hand up.
Okay.
According to Norton, they have Norton Mobile Security, a comprehensive protection for smartphones and tablets running iOS or Android.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, Kapersky said... does too.
Kapersky does too. Okay, good. So thank you for asking the question, Doug. There is now a generation of security software that's out there for both of those.
Okay, so you would recommend getting that then?
I would not recommend getting it. And the only reason why I'm saying this is not to be snarky, but I don't use it, so I've never used it before. If you feel uncomfortable that you're not protected, I'd say give it a try. And if you find out it's not all that great for you, take it off.
You know, you might also try AVG. AVG has a
AVG
mobile.
AVG has too.
Yeah. I mean, personally, I wouldn't put it on mine.
I don't have it on mine.
Why?
Well, I don't want
overhead.
I don't want the overhead, right. I don't want my
tablet. What do you mean
tablet.
By overhead? Just explain
I don't want
it,
the thing
Doug.
Slowing down because I have to run antivirus software and that's going to chew up on my CPU cycles or a percentage of my CPU cycles.
And
the only reason why I would put something like this on there, if there was a corporate security guideline for the corporation I worked for that said, thou must put protection on every device connected to our network, then yes, I would have to put antivirus protection on there.
So, Doug, one of the reasons we are a little hesitant on this is because he used the word overhead. First of all, the tablets don't have a lot of muscle. They don't have a lot of room.
They don't have the processing speed.
But in Doug's defense, though, he says he's trying to protect his grandchildren from it. So they don't.
What I'm trying to do is protect the device, tablet, so they don't accidentally get in something that attracts the virus.
In that case, I'd say my suggestion would be try it. And if you find that it's working okay for you, then you just continue. If you find that it's just making the thing into a brick, then take it off and go on about your business. And I think most antivirus companies allow you to use it for 30 days, and you can probably get a refund anyway.
Good point.
Eventually, we'll probably have to put them on.
Yep.
Eventually, I think so.
Well, right now, I mean, the Android devices are even lower on the ladder than Apple as far as being being lower on the ladder as a target.
It ain't bad.
For cyber criminals, right?
Exactly.
They're even lower because they really haven't penetrated the business environment yet to make it financially profitable for them to develop the viruses necessary for them to get money.
All right, Doug, have we answered your question for you?
Yes, you did. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Have a good holiday weekend. Appreciate hearing from you.
And
Sam,
I just love teasing Cal.
Yeah.
So.
Sam from Lansing, welcome to the Saturday Night Fights.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I've been receiving a BIOS error. Hello?
Yes. You just shocked us, that's all.
Okay, so what number? What does it say?
The number, I don't know. It loads up everything, and then it turns to a blue screen for some reason. It's happened 3 times so far.
How old is the computer? Is this a desktop or a laptop?
Desktop, and it's a Windows desktop HP computer. It's about, let's see, maybe 5 years.
Is it an XP, do you know?
No, it's a Vista.
Vista, okay.
Huh. And Windows doesn't come up at all, basically, is what you're saying.
No, it comes, and then it hasn't happened every time. It's like 2-3 times it's happened so far, twice this week, once this morning, and then...
Well, so you say the machine is about 5 or 6 years old?
Well, the first thing I would check is your date and time correct when you power up your computer. Have you noticed the date and time clock on your computer? Is it the correct date and time?
Pretty sure. It loads up the desktop because I go away because what happens at HP Advisor, so it takes a little time. All the icons come up, so I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Then other times I've left the computer running and then have come back, you know, so then I just press a key and it reloads, and once it's happened like that, so...
Is the machine running quiet, or do you hear a slight clickety-clack sound in the background?
Not quiet, I guess. Okay. I mean, maybe a little bit of the fan I hear, but I don't hear any strange noises.
Okay. Two things I could think of, and the first I alluded to was if your battery, the watch battery on your desktop, was failing or had failed, then the unit may not be keeping proper time, and you would get a BIOS error. Okay, that's the first thing I was alluding to. The second thing,
and if you open up a computer after you've unplugged it, of course, it looks like the size of a quarter. It's called a CMOS battery, right. And it's sitting right down on the motherboard.
Right, but it doesn't sound like that if you're keeping the proper time. Mm-hmm. One way to test that is to unplug your computer from the wall, let it sit overnight when you shut it down, unplug it, and then the next morning, power it up and see if your computer keeps the proper time. If it does, you probably got a good battery or CMOS battery. That's probably not the cause of the error. Because you have an HP Pavilion, one of the things you can do is you can go to HP's website and update the BIOS. So you can download from Hewlett-Packard, if you go to hp.com, go to the support section, you can have them run a utility on your computer, or you can type in the model number of your computer, and you can download an updated BIOS for your computer. That might fix a BIOS error that you're having.
Is it possible these are symptoms of a hard drive that is going?
That's what I was thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But you know something even easier than what you just told him about doing the update? That HP Advisor application that's loaded on his machine will do that for him automatically.
Right. If you click on it, it tells
it to go and check everything out. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Good point. So when you go to HP.com underneath the support tab, they have an HP Advisor section. Would you like us to identify your computer? And when you do, you have the ability to run the advisor where it can run some diagnostics and check your computer for updates.
This sounds like you really need to have somebody take a good, close look at your system. I'm having a stinking suspicion that maybe with that older machine, your hard drive is beginning to give you trouble.
It could be.
Could be.
Go to
could
the
be.
HP's website and run their advisor.
Run the advisor. Back in just a second to talk with Bill on the Internet Advisor. Thank you so much for having joined us for the Internet Advisor. By the way, for those of you who have subscribed to our iPod casts, have you been getting them, Gary, through iTunes?
I have not, but I just go to our site.
Yeah, how about Cal? Have you been getting them through iTunes?
I think I've been getting them from iTunes on a pretty regular basis. I'm going to just double check.
I've been having some trouble, and I think it was, I got a note from Apple. They changed some of the requirements for the image that you have up the artwork, and I can't get them through iTunes. I can go to iTunes. I can see all of our episodes, but I can't get them to sync with my iTunes
from
my computer.
Blacklisted
they didn't
iTunes?
Like that picture of your face on there.
That was probably it. The Mickey Mouse hat, I think, was what did it.
Those are headphones.
those are my regular ears. By the way, I use an application on the iPhone called Downcast. That is superb for getting. And it is maybe cost $3. But anyway, it's instantaneous. As soon as I post the podcast on Sunday night, boom, it's there.
Really? And I use Podcast, the podcast app on the iPhone, and it works really well as well. So
you're getting our podcast through there?
But I'm not getting
from iTunes. You go directly to the site.
But I just go to the site. Cause
so
I look
if anybody
it,
else out there
I live it. I don't need to listen to it.
Don't make me listen to it again. Anyway.
Foster likes the way his voice sounds.
It's like the old RCA thing with the dog. Listen, his master's voice. If you're having trouble getting hold of our podcast,
are we going to get back to the dang calls?
I hope so.
Podcast
all
out of Victrola, you just crank it up.
Go to internetadvisor.net, and you can, as Gary does, you can download it from there. You guys,
welcome to the Internet Advisor.
That should have only taken 30 seconds. I'm
I
so sorry, Foster.
Yeah,
we just
I know.
Harassed you. Digression
Bill,
has gone nuts.
Bill from
here.
Highland, save us from this rat hole.
Ask us a question, please.
We'll just switch gears ever so slightly.
Okay,
I've got a 3-year-old Windows Vista machine. It's an HP laptop.
Okay.
And I connect this particular device to a device that actually registers these little transponders that go by during foot races or auto races or whatever else it turns out to be.
Yeah.
And this particular computer needs to talk to the device using your network cabling, and it requests a dedicated IP address, and so I can connect there. But the software also has the ability to go out and to communicate with another PC wirelessly, but through the network, the local wireless network. The problem is my PC does not want to do both things simultaneously. That is, it doesn't want to connect through the wired internet connection and the wireless.
And the wireless.
And that's true. I mean, I think you'll find that with most laptops.
There's two ways of doing this. Good grief.
I don't think you'll be able to, because usually, have you ever heard of anyone else doing that? Because usually Windows, the operating system, will allow one or the other. It puts a cost to it. And if you're hardwired, it puts a lower cost on the wired connection, and it'll favor that over any wireless connection all the time, but it rarely uses both simultaneously. And I think if you did, your PC in essence becomes a router, and people do not want you routing traffic between two networks. So it's either one or the other.
Okay. Now I have an extension to that. What we call network printing. Okay, you decide that you've got your home network, or you go to some other location. Mm-hmm. And I went to my home network, and I could communicate between my PC and my wife's PC and her printer through the wireless network.
Right.
You know, all the devices could see one another. But right. I went to a remote location, and the printer sees its network. The PC sees the network, but they won't find one another.
Are you saying you brought the printer with you?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So you brought the printer with you.
I brought the same devices that I was using successfully at home, communicating with one another through my own wireless router, would not communicate when I went to a remote location, even though they would connect to the internet and, you know, I could get out and do email.
But you
and
couldn't
look at
get the network
like
to
that.
You couldn't get the networking to work between them.
But the difference in the two networks were when you went to the remote location, you had a different router, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so you have to take the wireless printer and you have to have it rediscover itself with that new router. So it gets assigned a new IP address, and then once it gets rediscovered with that new IP address for that router, then you can connect with the computer to that printer.
Well, then when I decide to tell the printer to print, then I have to specify an IP address?
No, he's not saying that. He's saying you have to go through the printer setup through the control panel on the printer and say find wireless network, just as you did the first time you set it up. Now, if you didn't use the control panel, it would require you to use the CD that the printer shipped from the manufacturer and basically says... And I believe you probably had to connect your printer USB that first time so that it can communicate with the printer to give it instructions to search for a wireless network. I mean, do you recall the first time?
And the printer said that it could see the wireless network. The little control panel came back and gave me, it asked for the password. I typed in the password for that network, and it's, yep, I see the network. Yep, I'm happy. My
Perfect.
PC does the same thing.
Okay, so then your print driver... needs to be told what the new address is of the printer, and that's supposed to happen automatically in the background. Was this a Hewlett-Packard printer?
Yes.
Okay, then it should have worked, unless you disabled certain items at startup on your computer.
Unless his configuration that's already on the computer for that particular printer is set up looking at, let's say, 198.162.0.1 at home at his own place, but when he went somewhere else, it picked up a different address,
so therefore
he has to redo it.
And that's true, but the way the Hewlett-Packard software works is that it basically, say you had a power failure at your house. Randomly, your PC or your printer would probably be assigned a new address. So every time you power up your laptop, it sniffs out and says, where's that printer? Oh, there you are, you know, and it sniffs it out.
So you say it dynamically changes it.
It dynamically sniffs out that printer and then reassigns it another address, and that should work.
Well,
but it didn't. With several different laptops, all of which that could talk to in the network, that, you know, they were all connected to the same network, but it was at another location than at my house where I had done all my dry runs. Now I'm going to someplace else to do this.
Yeah. And, well, here's something else you could try to confirm that. Print out the configuration page on the printer. Once you've done that, you should be able to then, it'll provide an IP address.
Right.
Then you can go in and through your web browser type in 192.168.1.1. 104, if that happens to be right. The address of the printer, and the web page of the printer should pop up. Because okay. that printer has a dynamic web page in there that you should be able to reach with the IP address that was printed out on the configuration page of the printer. I would try that.
Give that a crack, Bill, okay?
And then if that's successful...
Then delete the existing printer driver for that printer on the laptop and then re-add it again with that IP address.
Couldn't have said it better. But bring your installation DVD with you or CD for that printer and try that. It sounds like this guy's quite technical.
Yeah.
He's done everything he could, but we just need to provide him a couple more key pieces of information so that he can identify where the shortfall is.
Bill, I hope that works for you. It's a holiday weekend, and I hope it's a good one for you if you connect wherever you are in the future. Thank you so much, folks, for being here again with us. Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, Cal Carson, good to have you all in-house. Cal, you're going to be doing some traveling, I understand, in the next month or so.
Well, next weekend I won't be here, but I'll be back with my smiling face right after that.
And next week we're going to be talking with an old friend of ours, Steve Heyer, who is involved with some young people who are very excited about robots. And that's a great way of getting this technology thirst and quenching it in young people and getting them excited about that. So we look forward to that program coming up. For the rest of you folks out there listening to us live, have a great holiday weekend. Happy Passover, happy Easter. And thanks again to Annie Nichols and to what's-his-name, Scott Iovetta. Thanks so much for being with us, guys. Good being with you as
happy
well
Easter,
here on the
guys.
Internet Advisor. Happy Easter to all of you out there.
Happy spring cleaning.
Take care. You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show, the longest-running, locally produced computer show in Detroit radio. If you'd like to find out more about our weekly show, ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit internetadvisor.net. And you'll also find us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.